right, welcome to the Stronger Tribe podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. It is a beautiful Friday afternoon here in Sydney. I'm not sure where you are or when you'll be listening to this, but I hope wherever it is and whenever it is that you are doing well. I hope you are running or doing your rehab or going for a walk or hanging out the washing or just sitting around chilling. I've had a day, you could say. I was meant to have a quick little flight from Wagga to Sydney. Got cancelled, got delayed, the conveyor belt for the baggage broke, and all those good things. So it's Friday afternoon. I'm a bit over today, but I am very excited to chat to you about today's topic. And yeah, I'm keen to just hang out. I'm sitting on the couch, just relaxing. So strap yourselves in. It's going to be a good one. You're going to learn a lot. There'll be a bit of science, a bit of physiology, but also plenty of practical takeaways that you can implement. Because I think when it comes to running in the heat, I personally have been someone who probably doesn't really think about it beyond not running in the middle of the day and making sure I have my hat on and my sunscreen. But I've never really looked any deeper than that and thought to understand what is actually going on. Why does the heat matter so much? Why does it feel so much harder in the heat? And how can we actually maximize our cooling strategies so that when we are forced to run on hot conditions like the Sydney Marathon, we actually still perform well and we know how to manage the conditions. So we're going to go through a couple of different topics around how does the heat actually affect us physiologically. We're going to talk through some conditions or variables to consider when you are going out for a run in the heat if you've got no other choice. We're going to talk about the risks and dangers that come with it. There's some particular kind of scary conditions that you could run into if you're not careful doing especially longer distance on a really hot day. Then we'll get to the nitty-gritty and the important takeaway stuff where we are going to speak about how do we keep cool. This will be kind of physiologically what's actually going on in our body to cool us down, but also practically what can we do externally to manage our cooling strategies. So kicking things off, I found a little summary in one of the articles, which again, I'll have all the articles linked below so you can dive a little bit deeper yourself. But I thought this summarized it up really, really well. So endurance running in hot and humid environmental conditions is characterized by elevated thermoregularity, thermoregulatory, that's how I should say it, it's a big word, basically keeping yourself at the right temperature, 37 degrees, 1 degree above, 1 degree below. Elevated thermoregulatory, cardiovascular, and perceived exertional strain. So those three things are strained. Our ability to maintain our temperature, that makes a lot of sense. Our cardiovascular system, so our heart, our blood vessels, that's all having to work a lot harder. And we have this increased perceived exertional strain. So it feels harder. We feel like we're working harder. We feel like we're running at a pace quicker than we are. And our RPE has increased from a 5 to an 8, for example. Now, these three things typically lead to performance decrement relative to cooler conditions. So when we are in warmer conditions, we have these three kind of main factors that lead to a performance decrement or reduced performance, or our run feels less comfortable. We're not able to hit the same paces at the same heart rate as we normally would. So I think that's a really nice summary there. As I've spoken about just briefly, thermoregulation, I'll give you a little bit more of a breakdown, or thermal homeostasis. You would have heard the word homeostasis before, and it's just about maintaining that set point, not going too high, not going too low. And this could be temperature, this could be sodium, this could be so many other things in amongst all of the bodily systems. But what we're talking about today is temperature, so that thermal homeostasis. And the way that this is mainly achieved is by regulating the level of blood flow in the skin. So our skin is one of, if not the biggest organ in the body in terms of surface area. I was just trying to figure out if that was correct or not. I feel like I've heard that statement before. Don't know. Anyway, it's a big organ, our skin, lots of surface area, and that is how we lose most of our heat or gain most of our warmth, or, you know, that is where the temperature is changing. So the skin is super important. What I want to talk about first off, now that we've got a little bit of a summary, a bit of an understanding of what systems we're talking about, how do we actually get hot? Why is this happening even when we're not in hot conditions? What's actually going on in the body, and what kind of things contribute to this increase in heat, which will be really important later when we talk about our strategies to keep ourselves cool, because we want to kind of flip the switch on those and modify or adjust some of these processes using external options so that we keep ourselves cool. So When we're producing energy, we are contracting our muscles, we are going through a process of energy production, and as a byproduct of energy production, we produce heat. So the process of using ATP, which is one of our energy sources, it's the nice, short, snappy, quick energy, that takes about 20 to 25% of that process is used for muscle energy or energy from the muscles. The remaining 75 to 80% doesn't contribute at all to the energy production or the work done within the muscle cells. It is simply just internally released as heat. So you've got 20 to 25% of this energy production process contributing to the actual energy production and the work that's needed. And then the majority of that, energy, just contributes simply to heat. So you can imagine if we are working really, really hard, we are trying to produce as much energy as possible, meaning we're going to go through a lot of these processes to produce that energy, which therefore means we are producing a ton of heat in this process. So we need to therefore dissipate this heat into the environment so that we can limit the increase in core temperature. It's really important for our health, and you would have known when you're a kid, you're getting a fever and your parents checking your temperature all the time, monitoring that internal temperature to see whether you're going outside of that homeostasis. So about 37 degrees is roughly where we want to be sitting. A degree above or below is pretty normal. But when we start to go beyond that, things start to be impacted and it starts to get a little bit dangerous the further we go either side of that number. So this is why it's really, really important for our body to be functional and able to go through these different methods of heat loss so that we can remain cool in these conditions. So this increase in temperature is particularly detrimental for our endurance athletes. So those who are doing explosive efforts, maybe sprinting, long jump, those kind of movements, it's actually really helpful for our muscles to be warm. And this is really, really important for those situations where you are doing just a really quick, short burst of effort and then you're recovering. But for us endurance athletes who are maybe running for hours, maybe days at a time, it's a really, really critical thing that we need to consider, and it can kind of be make or break. If you have run on a hot day, if you did City Marathon that day, or if you've done any other events that have gone throughout really, really warm conditions, you'll know just how much that affects you psychologically and physiologically and how you feel. And it would be really, really hard to perform at your best in these conditions. So it's really important for us to be aware of that. So when we are a little bit warmer, we obviously have our cardiovascular system working a lot harder. So our heart rate is increased. We might have a reduction in blood volume, particularly if we are dehydrated. So typically what is associated with these hot, humid conditions is dehydration. It's really, really hard to maintain your fluid and hydration intake when you are doing an event or a run or a training session in the heat. So what typically happens is we get dehydrated, which therefore reduces our overall volume of water in the body. Of course, if we're dehydrated, we don't have enough water. And this is directly associated with our blood volume. So blood has a huge component of water, making up a lot of its total volume. So if we're dehydrated, we've therefore got less blood volume, meaning that our circulatory system has to work a lot harder when we really struggle to get the blood towards the skin to therefore dissipate and cool us down. So it's a bit of a dangerous cycle. If we are running in the heat, we're pretty likely to be dehydrated. If we're dehydrated, we're pretty likely or definitely going to have less blood volume. If we've got less blood volume, we really struggle to get that blood to the skin. And if we can't get it to the skin, it's going to be really hard for us to lose the heat. Therefore, we stay warmer. Therefore, we dehydrate more. And it's just this really dangerous cycle. So that is why hydration is super, super important. And we'll talk about exact sort of specifics around how to stay hydrated, how to hydrate yourself prior to the event, maintain that hydration, and then rehydrate after. But it is really, really important. It's a really valuable way to keep ourselves cool. You'll know just kind of instinctively when you're hot that you get thirsty, you want to drink, especially a cool drink. It's just the most exciting thing ever when you go around Centennial Park and you're 35Ks into a marathon and they give you ice cubes. It's fantastic. Or a cold water, it's incredible. And our body knows this too, because if we are more hydrated, we've got more blood volume, we can send more blood to the skin, therefore we can cool down. So it's not even just simply the, obviously the, you know, cold water in your mouth is going to start to cool things down from that area. But if we can fill up our blood cells a little bit more, we're going to cool down a lot more effectively. So that's a really, really important one to consider. There's a little bit of research, I mean, so much research actually, and I'll link a lot of the articles below, but there was some research to say that the world championships for, I think it was the 10,000 meters, when they were held with an ambient temperature, so the temperature in the air or in the environment, above 25 degrees Celsius, there was a 2% decrease in performance. Oh yeah, for distances longer than 5K. That's what we're talking about here. So 25 degrees isn't really even that hot. If you're living in Australia, particularly in the northern parts of Australia, that is not really to be considered that warm. But we can see we've had a 2% decrease in performance, and this is for world championship athletes. And a lot of the research, can't get my words out today. A lot of the research suggested that the more highly performing you were, or the more elite you were, or the more seasoned athlete you were, the less the heat actually has an impact on your ability to perform. So a lot of performance comes down to our VO2 max, our lactate threshold, our running economy. So if those things are all really high, we've got kind of less room for error. So recreational runners like ourselves have more, or they are more affected by hot and humid conditions. But we can see here that 2% decrease in performance for our world championship athletes is huge, really, really huge. There was also a study that looked at Western States performances on a cool day versus a hot day, and they found an 8% difference across the board with all participants there. So it really, really does affect things. So I think, like, beyond anything else, just don't be too hard on yourself. If you have done a race or you've got something coming up and it's going to be warm, just set your expectations. Don't expect miracles. And just know that if you are a little bit slower than usual, or if it feels a bit harder than usual, that's totally okay. And that is to be assumed. I think it would be crazy to think that we could perform at our best in these conditions after what we're going to talk about now. So some conditions and variables to consider. So firstly, if our pace, our effort, our energy, the metabolic heat production rate that we're going through exceeds our ability to exchange and release this heat, our body, our core temperature within our body is going to progressively increase. So we might need to manage our pace or our effort or our cooling strategies so that we can manage this and make sure that our core temperature is not increasing. Because as I spoke about, if we get beyond that homeostatic thermoregulatory area of about 37 degrees, things are going to start to go downhill pretty quickly. And once you're beyond that, it's hard to come back from. So if we can prevent it from happening, then we'll be in a much better position. So exercise intensity or pace or our effort or our RPE is the single greatest influence on the rate of our core temperature in the heat. That is something that Davies found in one of his articles that I will link below. But I think it's a really, really good one to think about, because we can really manage our perceived effort as well as the strain on our circulatory and thermoregulatory system simply by changing our intensity. So if we just run a little bit slower, maybe we walk some of the hills, maybe we take regular walking breaks, you know, maybe set a timer for 10 minutes of running, 1 minute of walking. If we can reduce that intensity, reduce our heart rate a little bit more, then we are going to be able to influence that core temperature rise and hopefully maintain our core temperature, or at least slow the increase. Okay, so that's really, really important to consider. Something else as well is the humidity. And I know, just anecdotally, running on a humid day is not fun. You feel extra sweaty, you feel extra hot, everything feels extra hard. But I never quite understood why, but it makes a lot of logical sense, and I'm sure you listening, you probably already understand this. But because the air is humid, there's more moisture content or water content in the air. Therefore, we've got less of a gradient. So if you remember from high school science, in order for things to cross, this is where, what I remember it from. I think it was the kidneys or something, the permeable layer. There was something about the gradient and the osmosis. I think osmosis. Anyway, if we have an area of high moisture or high fluid and an area of less, then it's going to be able to travel a lot quicker. But if the humidity in the air matches the moistness of our skin and our sweat, then there's not going to be much change occurring there. Something that also contributes to this is wind. If we've got no wind, if it's just not a windy day, or if we are maybe on a treadmill in a gym, or if we're running through a city with lots of big buildings that block the wind, then we're going to lose less heat because we're getting less of this convection that we'll speak about soon in terms of strategies. So the wind, the humidity affect things. We also obviously have an effect from the sun. So if you are in direct sunlight, that's going to make things worse. Now, a lot of these things are pretty straightforward, but I think it's important to remember because even, I'm going to talk about it a few times, but Sydney Marathon, I kept seeing heaps of people just running in the sun when there was shade. You know, there'd be shade on one half of the course and sun on the other, and you could very much easily access the shade, but people weren't going into it. And there was a huge heat gain from just simply being in direct sunlight. So getting away from that, getting into the shade is super helpful as well. Kind of the worst situation for us to be in really is if the air temperature is high, so it's a hot day, if the humidity is also high, if you've got a strong or constant exposure to the sun, so there's no shade, if you've also got like additional reflective solar energy coming off the running surface. So if you're on a track or if you're on a road, anything like that that is directly reflecting the sunlight, that's going to add to this as well. And if there's no breeze or wind, so hot, humid, direct sunlight, reflection off the surface, no wind, those five things are absolute worst nightmare conditions. We want to avoid those as much as possible, but sometimes we might turn up to a race and that is the situation that we are dealt with. So we're going to have to figure out how to overcome this because we can't just not run. I mean, obviously they'll call it off if it's dangerous, but most situations you're going to have to just run anyway and deal with it. So we'll talk about how to deal with it very soon. Now, something else I wanted to mention here when looking at different considerations or factors or variables is something that Kelly Kortik mentioned about the female to male differences. So she was kind of wondering what I thought about differences between female and male and what the research suggested. And she'd mentioned that the research is a little bit inconclusive about this. And when I was looking through the research, I also found the same thing. There were plenty of studies that said, you know, things such as there's not enough research done in females as usual. So really we don't know a lot about this, but something that Kelly mentioned and that did come up in the research as well is the obvious difference in hormones. So throughout a women's cycle, there's fluctuations in hormones and different thermoregulatory issues associated with different changes in these hormones as well. So at certain points in a female cycle, it does seem as though their core temperature is higher due to the changes in hormones. So therefore, surely this would have an impact on their ability to maintain their core temperature when they are running in the heat. There was nothing super conclusive, but I think that makes logical sense. Something else I came across as well was that there are actual differences between female and male in terms of simply just the size and density of our sweat glands. So men have bigger and more dense sweat glands, so therefore they're able to get rid of sweat a little bit easier. And yeah, they were kind of the main things that I came across. The only other thing as well, which I don't know, depends on the person really, but most women tend to have a thicker cutaneous layer. So when we're looking at the skin, we've got three main layers: the dermis, the epidermis, and the cutaneous layer. Now, the cutaneous layer is the layer underneath the dermis and the epidermis, and it is a layer of fat and connective tissue. Women tend to have a little bit more body fat, therefore they hypothesize that this would provide a little bit of insulation, but potentially would also not allow the heat to dissipate from the skin as much. So it's all a little bit up in the air, but I think it would definitely be worth considering if you are a female, looking at different stages in your cycle, and potentially if you are, I guess it's tricky too, because, you know, you're not going to have a full month or however long your cycle is of the same weather conditions. So it's really hard to compare different days of the cycle with the same weather conditions. But I think hopefully there'll be more research coming out in that in future times. So thank you, Kelly, for bringing that to my attention. All right, moving along, we're going to be talking about the risks or the dangers associated with training hard in the heat. Now, apart from the obvious things about just being a bit more uncomfortable, about working a bit harder, what should we actually be mindful of and what are some things that we need to be looking out for? So firstly, hyponatremia, which means low sodium. So if we are losing more electrolytes than we are putting into our system, then we're going to be at a slight deficit in terms of our electrolyte balance and our sodium balance specifically in this example. So making sure that we are keeping those levels topped up. Now, it might be a little bit tricky because you know, how do we actually know? At what point are we suddenly under? There's this number of 135 millimoles is kind of the level that we need to be above. But I don't think many of us have a sodium testing kit on us when we're running. So we just need to be really mindful of the signs and also just be really prepared. So making sure we're hydrated, making sure we've got enough sodium, maybe in the form of salt tablets or electrolyte fluid or anything like that. And if you know that you're a particularly sweaty person, and particularly if you're more of a salty, sweaty person, then this is going to be even more of an issue for you and something you need to be on top of. Also, if we are looking at the conditions that we spoke about before, so being in direct sunlight, having more humidity, no breeze, all those kind of things are going to mean that we are going to be at more risk of this as well. We're going to be hotter, we're going to be working harder, and we're probably going to be losing more sodium than we should be. So really just making sure that we're on top of that. It can lead to a lot of really scary kind of things like seizures and comas and all sorts of horrible things. So making sure that we are keeping those levels topped up is super, super important. Another big scary one is rhabdomyolysis, or rhabdo, and basically it's muscle breakdown. So this could even happen, you know, potentially not in the heat, but when we are warmer, these things tend to be at more of a risk because, as we've spoken about before, we are using a lot more energy than we normally would be. So we are burning through our fuel a lot quicker, and therefore we might eventually get into starting to use our muscles as fuel. And that's when we start to see that breakdown. We might get some protein released into the blood, and this can be super dangerous for our heart and our kidneys. And we want to stay away from that as much as possible. So again, keeping fueled, managing your pacing. We'll talk about strategies very soon. We can also have some damage to our kidneys and other organs. We can get cramping as well. So obviously cramping is a bit of a funny one. And the research is a little bit inconclusive as well about what actually causes cramping. And it seems to be more common now that we're starting to think it's more to do with training and just not being prepared for the pace or the situation or the terrain or the run that you're in at that time, and it's more about conditioning your body to be ready for that. But there are particular cramps that are more associated with dehydration, and these tend to kind of come on a little bit more gradually. You might get some early indications of some twitching or just a funny sort of sensation before it comes on, and often it's bilateral, so it might be both calves or both hamstrings, whereas the other type of cramps are a little bit more kind of sudden onset. They appear randomly and they just absolutely, you know, take you to your knees. It's more localized and they respond a little bit better to kind of passive stretching and just sort of shaking it off. Whereas the exertional heat cramps, unless you take a rest, rehydrate, cool yourself down, they're probably going to hang around for a while because they're more to do with the dehydration and the effects of the heat as well. Cool. And then obviously just like general heat exhaustion, heat stroke, headaches, those kind of things. So it's not fun, it's not comfortable. We need to make sure that we are putting some strategies in place. So this is the gold right here. How do we actually keep cool? Now, physiologically, the most common way that our body keeps cool, particularly when we are running or exerting ourselves, is through evaporation. So we lose sweat from the skin, this evaporates and cools us down in that process. So we lose a lot of heat through this process. Now there are other strategies as well, like radiation and convection, which we will chat about as well, but that evaporation of the sweat is kind of the key one that we need to think about and be aware of. The other one being radiation. This occurs when heat radiates between your skin and other objects or things in the environment. And if you're hotter than the environment around you, then more heat will leave. If you are a similar temperature to the environment, so if it's a really hot day, then you'll lose less heat through this radiation process. When we're just at rest, we lose about 60% of our heat through radiation, but when we're running, it's a little bit more of the convection and evaporation. So convection, that basically just means when heat is carried away from your body through moving air, so from a breeze or just simply from us moving through space, we create our own kind of airflow, and that heat will be carried away through this. If the surrounding air that is around you is cooler than your skin, then the air will absorb the heat from your skin, your surface, and it will rise and kind of move away. Then as the warmer air rises around you, cooler air will come in and replace that kind of layer around you. So if you imagine like you've got your skin layer and then around that we've got this layer of air, the warm air will be replaced by this cooler air, and that will keep moving through. So the faster the air moves, the cooler that you'll be, because this process will be happening quicker and more efficiently, and you'll be getting more cool air too. So that's why when you're hot and you've just done a workout and you stand in front of a fan, it feels fantastic, because this process is really sped up. We were noticing this a little bit actually at the Movember run, the 30K last week. It was kind of humid, but not super sunny, not super warm. And when we would stop at a traffic light, everyone was like, gosh, it's so hot. Like suddenly you would just feel so warm. And then you start moving again and it was fine. So that was really, really highlighted, that influence of running through and moving through air, and how much that actually does provide a nice breeze and cool you down through this convection process. I think it's super interesting. So convection, evaporation, radiation. There are three kind of means of getting this warm air or warm temperature away from our body. But a couple of actual strategies that we can do. Obviously, we don't have much of an impact on those three, but what we can do is our external choices and how we go about doing different things. So number one is hydration. We've spoken a lot about the dangers of dehydration and why that is so influential in kind of our breakdown when we're starting to get a little bit too hot. So when we're exercising on a hot day, our core body temperature and heart rate increase. One paper said between 0.12 degrees to 0.25 degrees and 3 to 5 beats per minute. But there were a lot of studies that also suggested this was much higher as well. So obviously it's going to be quite individual, but we do know that our core body temperature and our heart rate both increase when we are exercising in the heat versus in a cooler condition. Now that 3 to 5 beats per minute is kind of respective to how much body mass you're losing. So when we are dehydrated, if we start a run, you weigh yourself before and then you weigh yourself after, and if you've sweated quite a lot, you would have lost some body mass. So what this is looking at is the more body mass you're losing, and therefore the more dehydrated you are and the hotter you probably are, then the higher your heart rate and core temperature will increase as well. So that's really interesting. So basically what this is telling us is the more hydrated we can be, the lower our core temperature will stay and the lower our heart rate will stay. So this is really, really influential on our performance. So if you can just figure out a way to get more fluid into you, more electrolytes and more water, then it's going to have huge, massive impacts on your performance. Because as soon as your core temperature starts to rise, as we've spoken about, all those systems start to work a lot harder. And if our heart rate is higher too, we're going to end up in higher thresholds than we need to be. We're going to be working a lot harder. We'll be producing more lactate and we'll be unable to sustain an intensity that we normally could. So that's why on a hot day, running at a certain pace that you're normally comfortable with is much more challenging, because everything is challenged in those situations. Our heart rate and our temperature are higher, and we really need to be in that homeostasis, that comfortable thermoregulated zone. And when we step outside of that, we start to deteriorate. So super important. In terms of how much we actually be having, again, it depends on body weight, sweat rate, all those kind of things. So it really is a trial and error. I think more is better. I don't know. I think it would be very, very hard to overdo it in terms of race hydration during an event. I think you would struggle to drink too much. I'm sure it's possible. And there are obviously risks as well with drinking too much and taking on too much fluid, but I think for so many of us, and if not all of us, I think we're probably all not having enough. So as a general rule, we should probably try to increase that a little bit. So making sure that you are having enough fluid before the run, during the run, and after the run. And if you're someone who is training back-to-back days multiple times a week, then it's really, really critical that you're rehydrating in between these bouts of exercise. So if you say, let's for example go for a run on a Monday night, and you might lose 0.5 kilo of fluids through sweat, you then need to replace that plus more for your total daily intake, as well as preparing yourself for your Tuesday morning run. Because if you start your Tuesday morning run already dehydrated from the Monday night run, then you're already setting yourself back. You're going to be warmer, that core temperature will be higher, your heart rate will be higher. So we really need to be making sure we're replacing those fluids in between events as well, or in between training runs, making sure we're not just taking on water. So that sodium, magnesium, the electrolytes, they're super, super important. As we've spoken about, the hypernatremia, and the just general hydration and keeping ourselves cooler is really critical with the electrolytes as well. So making sure we're topping those up as frequently as possible. I think that's it for hydration. If you are needing a little bit more information, you can get a sweat test performed And that will give you a little bit more detail about how much you're actually sweating and the concentration of that. So whether you're a high sodium sweater or maybe your sweat is a little bit more diluted, and that will help you tailor your hydration strategy specific to you. But otherwise, just be getting some electrolytes in and be getting some water in and see how you feel. Maybe weigh yourself before and after the run. And if you are losing weight on those runs, then you're not taking enough in. So we really need to start increasing that. All right, so that is strategy number one, hydration. Strategy number two is pacing. So heat is produced during energy production, we know this. So the more energy that's required, the more heat will be produced. So if you are running at 6 minute pace and your heart rate is 135 beats per minute, you'll be producing a certain amount of energy, and a certain amount of heat will therefore be released into your body and hopefully into the atmosphere as well, getting away from us, at a certain rate at that intensity. If we are then running at that same 6 minute pace, but now our heart rate is 145 beats per minute because our core temperature is higher and our cardiovascular system is working harder because we're hotter, then we're producing more energy, therefore we're going to produce more heat as well. So it's a never-ending cycle of, if we're trying to maintain a pace that we think we should be able to run at, we're just going to get continually hotter and hotter. And the hotter we get, the more energy we're going to need, and then the hotter we're going to get. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? Hopefully that's clear for you guys. The more energy we produce, the harder we work, the more heat is produced. The more heat that is produced, the more energy we need, the more heat is produced. Do you know what I'm saying? This is just like a never-ending cycle. So a really, really simple strategy, which of course, if you're going for a PB or a goal time, might not be ideal for that situation, but we need to make sure we're being safe and you're going to feel way more comfortable, and you might even get a better time if you just cut the pace back a little bit, even temporarily, potentially, just to get the heart rate down a little bit, maybe take on some fluids while you're slowing down, and then potentially you could go again. You could kind of break it up into running and walking sections, but I think it's a really, really valuable tool just to slow things down. It's going to mean that you're probably able to sustain that effort for much longer versus running harder for a shorter amount of time. There's some suggestions to say that because of this, because of how much energy we need for a certain pace is then associated directly with how much heat we produce. There was some research comparing marathons to ultra marathons in regards to training in the heat and racing in the heat. And they found that the ultra endurance runners potentially have less thermoregulatory and temperature control requirements than a marathon because the intensity is a little bit lower. Despite these needs being maintained for a much longer time for an ultra marathon, because the intensity is lower and the heart rate is lower, the effects aren't so severe versus in a marathon where it's a little bit more intense. The only issue though that comes with pacing yourself or slowing down or potentially even stopping is obviously we get less of that convection. So we're not producing as much wind. We're not moving through the air as quickly. So we're not losing as much heat through that convection process. So that's only limiting factor. So potentially you could, if you were on a trail run and there was a section where you were in direct sun, you could look at it both ways, right? You could maybe speed up in that section to get it out of the way quicker, but then obviously things are going to be working harder. Or could you slow it down to reduce the intensity and the heart rate, but then be in the sun for longer? So I'm not sure exactly what the answer is, but I think it's worth playing around with different strategies. I think being in the shade at all times as much as possible is really beneficial. Getting out of that direct sunlight is really, really valuable. Trying to pace yourself at certain times throughout the race. Maybe when you're going up a hill, you're walking, keep the heart rate down. Maybe that's when you take on your food and fluid as well. So you can kind of tie in a few different habits and a few different strategies at the same time. But I would definitely suggest even having little breaks, sit down, have a rest, lower everything down a little bit rather than just trying to push through. We saw so many people at the Sydney Marathon just collapse at the end or just before the end because they weren't able to pace themselves in time. And just eventually your core temperature is just slowly rising and rising and you're just slowly getting more dehydrated, and we can't sustain that forever. So something's got to give eventually. So that would be pacing strategy. We've got hydration, pacing, and now acclimatization, which is not always practical, unfortunately. We don't all have 2 weeks to spare to go to our race location and get ourselves used to the situation. And particularly as well, even if it's not an event that's far away, if it's in Sydney, for people who live in Sydney, we weren't able to acclimatize because the weather was just so out of the ordinary for what we had been experiencing for the last few months that we couldn't even prepare for that. But for a race such as the Sun Run, which is going to be in February in Sydney, you will probably be able to prepare for the conditions a little bit better because I'm assuming it's probably going to be a little bit more consistent with the weather at that time of year. So you can get out and train in the conditions. If you're going away for a race overseas, then ideally getting there at least a couple of days before. There's some research to say that minimum of 3 days. The gold standard ideal would be 2 weeks. Slightly less than that would be a week, but the minimum would be 3 days to really get any kind of benefits from the acclimatization. Now, the issue with that is you kind of need to, have a long duration in these conditions. So it wouldn't be a matter of just like going for a walk or a quick little jog on a warm day. It's probably not enough. You really need to push the duration out to about an hour, and it needs to be intense enough for you to actually be sweating and going through that process, because basically what we're trying to do is get the body used to that situation. It'll hopefully, you know, after the 3 days or a week or 2 weeks, it'll start to lower your resting core temperature as well. So when you start that run, your core temperature will already be a little bit lower, you know, maybe 0.1 of a degree or whatever it is, a little bit lower than what it would typically be. So you've got a little bit more of a ceiling to reach to, you know what I mean? If you're, 37 is your normal, you might be 36.95. So you've got a little bit more time before you reach that kind of peak or capacity of your temperature. What this also does is increase our plasma volume. So we've got more volume of blood traveling around the body. And as we learned before, this is really important for us to then get that blood flow to the skin, to the surface, so that it can dissipate and we can cool down. So that increased plasma volume is a really nice adaptation that we see from the acclimatization. We also see a reduction in exercise heart rate as well. So at a certain intensity over time, as you acclimatize, this heart rate should start to drop slightly, or at least maintain or settle at that point. Now, these responses last about a week. So if you go somewhere and you're there for a week, you can kind of get yourselves exposed to these conditions for about a week, and then do your race, and then, you know, those adaptations will hang around for another week or so. So it's not like you can go and do a training camp in the heat in January and then hope to have the same effects by March. It's something that is kind of one and done in the moment. It needs to be happening right then and there. But yeah, if you've got access to that, that is fantastic. But even, you know, if you're training for an event that's going to be on a warm day potentially, then it might be worth trying to get out, you know, in the middle of the day or a little bit later, rather than, you know, doing your run first thing in the morning or last thing at night. Trying to get exposed to those hours of the day that are typically a little bit warmer is probably going to be quite beneficial as well. Now, our fourth strategy is pre-cooling. So getting your core temperature as low as possible before you start your run, it's going to increase your heat storage capacity. So basically, we're going to lower the core temperature, meaning again, we've got that more room to play around with before we reach that capacity or that ceiling. So this can be done through things like ice vests or ice slushies, slurries, ice drinks, anything like that. So if you're going to an event and you're going to take a bottle of water before the race, which I would highly recommend, or a bottle of Tailwind, put some ice cubes in it and sip on that throughout the morning to keep your core temperature cool. Maybe you could take a wet towel, maybe you've put it in the freezer so it's nice and cold, and you hang on to that, throw that around your neck, and that should help to keep you cool as well. So you might not have access to slushies and things like that or ice vests, but yeah, maybe taking an ice pack or one of those cool towels or things like that is going to be really helpful for you to hang on to prior to the race so that you're starting off with a nice low core temperature. Now, this is often kind of a little bit backwards to what we would typically look at when we're thinking about things like doing a warm-up. But as we spoke about before, being warm is really important for those more explosive, fast velocity movements. But for our endurance events that are going to last for hours and hours, and we're going to be really towing the line between hydrated and dehydrated, and therefore able to sustain what we're doing and not able to sustain it, it's really important to keep ourselves cool prior to that. Our final strategy is going to be clothing. So as we spoke about with that convection and also with the radiation, we lose a lot of heat from our skin and the surface of our skin. So if we are covered head to toe in clothes, we've got an external barrier, a synthetic barrier potentially, between our skin and where the heat can go. So it's not very helpful. So when you see those guys running around the track with shirts on, I think we all, at least I do, laugh at them going, oh, they're just showing off, ha ha ha. But it's actually really smart. It will actually make a huge difference on their core temperature and therefore the effort that they can put in and the effort they can sustain. So minimal clothing is ideal. Obviously, that's not always practical. It might not always be comfortable for everyone, but really, really helpful for those convection and evaporation techniques as well to get as much surface area exposed so that we can therefore cool things down as efficiently as possible. Also avoiding dark or black clothing as well, that really absorbs the heat. So the heat will then stay in the clothes and therefore increase your skin surface temperature. And therefore you're not going to lose as much heat as well. It's going to stay within you. So light or bright clothing as well. There's apparently the bright clothing reflects the heat off you as well. So that could be really helpful as well. So thinking things like bright fluoro yellow, those kind of things. And then finally, just recognizing the signs. So just being really intuitive and mindful. And sometimes we just might not know. We might be so deep into the race that obviously we're not feeling good anyway. We might not be aware that we've got a bit of a headache or we're feeling a bit nauseous or those kind of things, and maybe not associating that with our hydration. So being really mindful of that. If you're getting thirsty, then you're already dehydrated. There's signs before that physiologically that we are lacking fluid and lacking hydration before we even get thirsty. So if you know that during a run you do get thirsty, maybe you're craving water or a drink at the end of your run, it probably means you're not hydrated prior to or during the run. So really getting on top of that rather than just trying to replace it afterwards. Cool. All right. They are our strategies and I think we are pretty much there. So just a little bit of a summary. Heat is really important and it really can be detrimental to our performance and also our health. So a couple of quick tips for you. Avoid direct sunlight. Try and take rests or pace yourself, slow things down as much as you can. Wear less clothing or bright clothing if you can, and avoid anything that's going to heat you up before the run. So if you're driving somewhere, crank the aircon, get that flowing, have an ice cold bottle of water or Tailwind, take an ice pack or a wet cold towel and keep that on you for as long as possible, and just be really mindful of that. Taking a pack with you, even if you're, you know, some people have a funny thing about if they're not doing a run, a massive run, they're not going to take their pack, they're not going to take a water bottle because they don't think they need it. But just getting into that habit, so even whatever run you're on, you're just constantly sipping something, it's going to be way more beneficial for our performance long term, even if we might not need it in the moment or feel like we need it or feel like it's just a little bit silly. It's a really, really good idea to get into the habit. So they would be my tips for you. Hopefully you've taken something out of this episode. Sorry, it's a little bit chaotic. I came and went, came back in. So hopefully it all makes sense for you. If you've got any questions around this or if you disagree, agree, got some questions, comments, concerns, send them through on Instagram. We can chat all about it. And yeah, hopefully we can all take something away from this. And I think as well, just giving ourselves some credit and understanding that when it is hot, we are just going to have to change our expectations and manage that. And when we're training, this means just keeping things a little bit slower, relaxing into it a little bit more. When we're racing, we just need to understand that if we are going to continue to push the pace, we're going to have to use those other strategies even more so to make sure that we're actually able to perform. Because if we push the pace and continue to run at our planned race pace that we were expecting to do, but the temperature has been much warmer than we thought, it's not going to end too well. So just being sensible, throw the ego out the window and stay cool. Thanks, guys.